Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power hour. Power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. Power hour. Power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field.
Let's go. We are an LSU football channel, but of course, there's a whole lot going on in the world of LSU athletics. Shout out to Angel Reese. Great debut for the Chicago Sky in the last 48 hours. LSU baseball looks as if they're going to be able to take care of business. LSU softball, biggest moment of Beth Tarina's career. It's postponed until tomorrow. They'll obviously have first pitch at 11:30, but you're here for football. Tyler Barron, the scouting report tonight will be given. Long story short, because look, our attention spans are shorter, and we do go pretty long throughout the evening. Tyler Barron's a good football player. Now, I understand that there are some hurdles that have to be cleared, and I will not back off of my major criticism of him jumping around from team to team to team to team. That always feels like a red flag if you were just looking at it objectively. But if you were just to look at his numbers objectively, you'll see that he was a big-time producer for Tennessee as the opposite pass rusher, 6 sacks last year, 28 total tackles. And look, he has consistently gotten better as a player. Now, I'm not going to tell you that he's special, but I will tell you the likelihood of him starting and playing a lot for us next year is really, really, really good. And look, he might not necessarily even play week one with our defensive end rotation being as deep as it is. But this is a guy that I like a lot, and I am open to bringing him in if he is locked in on being an LSU Tiger. The only problem is he number 9 is not available at LSU. So, Tyler, I'm sorry to burst your bubble if you were dead set on wearing that jersey number. Now, I've got to say something about Will Campbell here. He is getting robbed in the most major way. So, NCAA football is coming out. And I see that there are not one, not two, but three major cover athletes. The cover was released today. And the three players that were on the cover of the NCAA video game was three players that I believe are not better than Will Campbell. I feel one of them at his peak when he is fully healthy is better than Will Campbell. And his name is Travis Hunter. Now, I understand you want to have a quarterback on the cover. There are plenty of quarterbacks in the SEC that are better than Quinn Ewers, who I think is drastically overrated. But I understand why you have him on there. Texas is a big brand. They're new to the SEC. Travis Hunter, of course, is a superstar. But Donovan Edwards, I understand he is a running back. I understand that Michigan won the national championship, and I understand you want a Big Ten brand. As you can see, you have one of the three big conferences all represented here with the SEC, Big 12, and Big Ten. My thing is this, okay, and I see this all the time in football cards. Offensive linemen do not get enough love. When we know that especially at the collegiate level, the value of a great offensive lineman is tenfold. This would have been a great time for the NCAA to say, look, offensive tackles need love too. And Will Campbell is one of the best college offensive tackles we have ever seen at LSU, and he is one of the best offensive tackles at LSU. But no, we got to have the fancy-smanchy single-digit number guys. It's always about the skill guys, and I get tired of it. I will tell you this. There is a very prominent offensive line evaluator who reached out to me 5 to 6 months ago about football card collecting, and he only cares about offensive linemen. It's his full-time job, and he is respected in NFL circles. He's got over 100,000 followers on all platforms, and he is paid pretty highly to write and evaluate offensive line for multiple, you know, sites and teams and all of that. And I reached out to him, and he said, hey, I want to collect offensive line cards, and they're hard. Even Jason Kelce, one of the most iconic figures in all of sports, hardly has any football cards out there. So I understand an offensive tackle's job is repetitive. It seems redundant. It's not as flashy as a skill guy. They're not the sexy ones. But I would love an NCAA cover with Will Campbell on the front of it in the number 7 uniform as God intended. And I'll go one step further. He should be allowed to wear the number 7 on the field. I just don't understand why we got to be discriminate towards offensive tackles. Well, the skill guys need to know who's ineligible. That's not the offense's job for you to figure out who's eligible and who's ineligible. You're basically told that every snap. You know who the eligible receivers are, and no one's going to mistake Will Campbell for a tight end because he is 6'4", 320. Okay? So, look, I'm sick of it. Will Campbell deserves to be on the cover, because I can hear an argument for Travis Hunter being a better football player than Will Campbell. I would go as far as saying he probably is. He does have a higher peak, and he does do things that other college football players cannot do, which is play both ways and do so at a high level. But it's close, right? If you're listing the best players in all of college football, everyone would pick Will Campbell. But Quinn Stinky Ewers? Really? Donovan Edwards is a backup running back? Really? We could have picked better NCAA cover athletes. So that's not here nor there. Now, as always, on a Thursday night, I apologize because we were supposed to start at 5 p.m. Central. We went back to our regular time at 8:15 Central because LSU baseball moved their game up. There will be no live stream tomorrow, but I will be tuning in for LSU softball. Really excited for Bet Torina and Taylor Pleasance and the LSU Tiger softball team. Now, obviously, there's not a whole lot going on in the world of LSU other than the big news, JVR Suggs commits. We do have a film study up on Patreon. If you want to support what I am doing, one of the best things you could do is sign up for the Patreon account. You get one-on-one opportunities to chat with me, and at the same time, you get to be involved in all our contests, all our film studies, and you get access to our Discord. So make sure you check it out. Now, we go to the nooffseason.com chat line. Cliff went to the game tonight, I believe. Good to see you, Brian. I thought that was Justin Pierce for Tennessee in the portal. Oh, man, no, he's not going anywhere. Now, he is worth Justin Pierce or James Pierce, either one. I think it's James Pierce. He's worth what Dominic Williams got, if not more. He is truly great. Kedrick with our first super chat of the evening. Thank you so much, Kedrick. We really appreciate you. So, Kedrick, with the Cash App, you get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. But look, James Pierce is not entering the portal. Tennessee will not let that happen. It is funny, though, today, speaking of Tyler Barron, on the Power Hour SEC channel, I did a deep dive on the Tennessee recruiting class. And, you know, I got to be real, okay? One thing that I have noticed over the past couple of days, and it becomes even more alarming when I study these types of things. You know, I'm not the biggest Mack Brown guy, but he did say something so profound in an interview I think about a year and a half ago, and it involves LSU and involves everyone in college football. Mac Brown said the following: college football has changed more in the past 3 years than it did in the past 40 plus years combined. Now, let me repeat that. College football changed in the past 3 years more than the past 40 years combined. It was something along those lines. And I understand when you say something like that, you could be a prisoner of the moment. But the truth is, Mac Brown has never said something more right. And I would also trust his opinion, him being older, and then, of course, being a genius, college football genius. But, you know, we have focused so much on the transfer portal. We have focused so much on NIL and the changes that are coming to that. And look, all those things are very impactful to the world of college football. And then, of course, even though this is in the past 3 years, in 2018, they changed a redshirt rule where it's four games or less. That was a big rule change. In the past 3 years, scholarship limitations are not the same. You could sign as many players as you want. I mean, there's just so freaking much that's changed. The early signing period compared to the late signing period. All of this happened, and then that doesn't change coaches leaving from A jobs to A-plus jobs. It also doesn't change, well, the early signing period becoming bigger than the later signing period, and all the conference alignment change. All those things are true. But I cannot state this enough. Mac Brown saying that really, really, really changed my opinion on a lot of things, including this from Kedrick. Carter, I'm very underwhelmed with that NCAA football cover. I am too. Will Campbell should be on the cover of the game. Carter, I really trust Baker. I think our defense is actually going to be okay as long as Major Burns isn't out there. One more thing on the Will Campbell thing, okay? I would be saying this about any offensive lineman. It would be nice for an offensive lineman to get that type of treatment. It really would be nice, but that's not here nor there. And Major Burns actually fits into this. Let me make sure I get this right with Major Burns. And I want to make sure I have this correct. Okay, this is correct. Actually, no, this is not correct for Major Burns because he's still... hold on. Let me make sure. Because if you super chat, I want to make sure I'm including him. Okay. So... Major Burns has would have had 1 year of eligibility remaining regardless of the COVID year. But before I talk about Major Burns here, the most underrated college football change was actually a change that they didn't make. They were kind of forced into doing, which was the COVID year of extra eligibility. LSU... And I really, this would be something that I would relay to Austin Thomas if I had a direct line to him. I would relay this to anybody if they were to hire me as a college football consultant. Now, I don't know why they would do that other than doing my own recruiting rankings, data, all that stuff. I would love. I would go to any school in the SEC if they were to hire me as an analyst. But if Austin Thomas, I'm giving him this advice for free. Or Brian Kelly or whoever. The one thing I would heavily emphasize is how much LSU has been saved by the bonus COVID year. And it goes into the issue of depth. Like for so long, and really since the 2019 team, LSU has not been a deep team. Now, in 2019, they didn't necessarily need all the depth because they had a tight wide receiver rotation, which I'm a fan of. They didn't have depth really at tight end, but thankfully Thaddeus Moss, who retired this week, was really good. But really, on defense, they were really, really, really deep, you know, throughout that roster, the defensively. It was crazy. And if you really look over the past five or so years, that COVID year has really kicked in well for LSU. A lot of year six guys on this team, or obviously if the COVID year never happened, we never get the Jaden Daniels Heisman season. And I think we underrate that, and we, and the ripples of that are still happening. Now, I think the end of the COVID year will be probably not next year, but the year after that when it comes to the eligibility stuff. But man, it is crazy, crazy how big that has changed this sport. And we are bringing in a lot of guys with 1 year of extra eligibility because of the COVID year, right? So it's really, really, really changed a whole lot. Let's go to Kedrick here. He says, hey, well, the defense is going to be great as long as Major Burns isn't out there. All right. So let's have a conversation here about Major Burns. And I feel like this conversation is one that we can have civil, one that won't involve too much mudslinging. You know, I think it's so important when you talk about a player, you don't obviously just destroy them. But if they're a bust or if they're not really good, you just bring, you just say it, right? I won't say Major Burns has been a bust. In fact, he's been pretty solid for LSU. But he is a liability. Now, they're working him in at a new position. He was a safety. Now he is more of a nickel, okay, playing the star money nickel role. There's a lot of different terms for it, but whatever you want to call it, he is the nickel back. Not the band, the actual position. I think Major Burns is better served for that position, but I'm with you, Kedrick. I am very concerned. The issue you run into though, Kedrick, is there are other members of the LSU secondary going into next year that I would consider more of a backup quality type of player. You know, Sage Ryan is a guy that I feel is more of a backup quality type of player. I think Jordan Gilbert can be a starter level player, but we'll see how that works out. And really the only member of the LSU secondary I'm comfortable saying is a full-time starter level player that will more than likely get drafted next year is Zai Alexander. Okay. And sometimes some of the best things that can happen to your team is an injury or something that holds up their potential progress. I feel if Zai Alexander would have kept playing last year, the likelihood of him going to the NFL would have gone up. Now, let me make sure Zai Alexander is not a year two guy last year and an upcoming year three guy. And I believe he is class of 2020. So he's same recruiting class as Major Burns. So he is on the older side. Zai Alexander was pretty solid for us last year. Really, really, really solid. Now, if you want me to go on a rant, you'll hear me on a rant about how he got hurt was total BS. It should have never happened. But that's not here nor there. You know, if you start saying, hey, our defense will be better with so-and-so not being in the lineup, what can happen is when does it stop? If you want this guy out, then you become thinner at that position. It's a little bit different at a school like Georgia where they are deep almost everywhere on defense every single year. If you're not good, we don't have to play him. Okay? So another thing is the coaching staff, as Pegasus points out, likes Major Burns a lot, and they want to see him in this role next year. And Brian Kelly was big on retaining the roster. Now, this goes back, and obviously we have waxed poetic on the last couple of weeks with LSU's NIL and all of that. I want this also to be clear. when you retain players that don't really have a massive market, it's cheaper. It's just cheaper in the NIL era to do that. It's also a little bit more cohesive to do that. So could Major Burns make a major step forward next year? Absolutely. The one thing I would say to him, though, and this would be one major change I would make if I was Jake Olsen or Corey Raymond in that DB room, I feel a defensive back, you have to have a calm demeanor. Now, you can be fired up and talk a lot of trash like Richard Sherman, but Richard Sherman was an unfreaking believable technician. And what made him so great was when you watched him play, he was always very much under control. And if you really look at some of the best corners of all time, sure, there are some corners out there who are athletic freaks, like a Daryl Green, if you will. Ironically, I've met Daryl Green before. He randomly worked out at LSU one day. I was like, wait, that's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And he's like 60 right now, and he could still run a 4.5 or something crazy like that. He is truly stupid athletic. But you take out like an athletic freak like him, who also technically was very gifted, you look at a lot of great corners and DBs. The key to playing that role is control. It is a position that does heavily rely on athleticism, but how you control yourself matters. How calm are you? When you get turned around or you get beat, are you panicking? And I felt, you know, last year, Major Burns would be a little too amped up, be just a little bit too aggressive. I keep going back to this Texas A&M play where they should have tacked on an extra 15 yards. He got in a guy's face out of bounds and got really physical with him, pushed him. And it should have been a 15-yard penalty. They normally call that, but they didn't. So I will tell Major Burns, hey, we understand how badly you want to make it work in LSU. We know more than anyone in this room right now, you probably want to win a national championship because Major Burns was at Georgia in 2020. In the next 2 years, Georgia would go on to win national championships. Major Burns wants to win one more than anyone else in that room. I guarantee it. He's a good leader with a great story. Obviously, coming back to LSU after what happened in 2020 during that recruiting cycle. He's a leader of the team, his single-digit number. He's got a different safety aesthetic when he wore the neck roll. There's a lot of things that I like about him. But I do agree with you, Kedrick, that I am very worried about our secondary next year.
I am.
Presha is with you, Kedrick. He's a little fed up. If Burns doesn't show significant ability to make a big play or a big tackle, I'm replacing him by week three with an underclassman. And it's interesting. It's very, very interesting. You know, there's some really talented underclassmen in there. There really, really, really are. Okay. Let's go to Kedrick. I'll push back just a little bit on this one. He says, if anybody believes in Major Burns, go watch FSU and how Keon Coleman had his way. Did Keon Coleman's that guy. That was just a murderer's row. You had a really talented, it was essentially a first-round pick, go against his former team with an elite quarterback. And man, he took it out on us. You would have thought he was Julio Jones versus us. So, yeah, I get that. But to your point, Kedrick, outside of the Keon Coleman stuff, there were a lot of rough moments there for Burns. I will tell you this, though. If I had to choose playing one or the other, would I choose Major Burns or would I choose Sage Ryan to be a starter for any college secondary? I'm taking Major Burns. Okay, I'm taking Major Burns. Now, one final thing on safety. And I know I've gone on a few rants about this, but I'll do it again now. the word safety has meaning. All right. It does. All right. Some terms in football are pretty direct. All right. If I tell you, what does a long snapper do? Well, you long snap it. You're doing long snaps. If you are a kicker, your job is to kick. It's kind of like the term meatloaf. Anyone knows what a meatloaf is, right? Some of you might have had meatloaf tonight. So what is meatloaf at its core? It is meat in loaf form. It's pretty direct. Some foods are like that. Now, let's get to the word safety. And even though Major Burns isn't really a safety, there's going to be some instances where he's going to be lined up there. The word safety literally means, can you keep us safe? And the issue is our safeties have not kept our defenses safe. And I will hire an analytical tracking site, if it's MathBomb or whoever, SIS or any one of these tracking companies. One analytic tracking stat that I feel is so unfreaking believably underrated is the touchdown saving tackle. Meaning, when a running back breaks off for a 40-yard run from your 45-yard line, can you tackle him at the 5-yard line to prevent him from scoring? And I think that is something that truly does move the needle. It truly, truly, truly does. And our defensive backs have not done the best job of that. They just haven't. You want to talk about one of the most underrated plays in LSU history. It was Grant Delpit playing through an injury who did this very thing versus an Auburn running back. It was number 8. I'm losing my mind here. Forgot his name. He broke off a long run because Jacoby Stevens was lined up as a linebacker and he got out of his gap and it was a long run. And Grant Delpit was able to chase him out of bounds and score a field goal. Okay. Now, obviously, it's not apples to apples here. LSU ended up winning that game by 3. All right. That touchdown saving tackle saved 4 points. It is so critical. And we need our DBs to do it because obviously our defense is going to have some growing pains. And when someone breaks off for a long run, we don't want them to be able to walk into the end zone. You don't want to do it. Force them to execute in the final 10 yards of the field or in the red zone in general. It is so key. So key. It can be a 4-point play. Now, it's ironic about Grant Delpit making that play is that the entire season, including myself, wrongfully kept saying that Jacoby Stevens was better than Grant Delpit during that 2019 run when that wasn't true. It wasn't true. Grant Delpit was still good. He played hurt and played a new position that wasn't really his position. But that's revisionist history. We're talking about now. The touchdown saving tackle is so key. You've got to be able to bring guys down. You cannot let them score. You just can't. If you get burned, don't give up on the play. Hustle your ass off. Horse collar them if you have to. Just do whatever it takes. Do whatever it takes. Now, coming up in a moment, we have got some baseball breaking news. That's coming up after this.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. Alrighty, so this is via Jacques Doucet. LSU baseball has been in talks with meteorologists about moving the start time up for Ole Miss on Friday up. So obviously, weather is an issue in BR. The bottom line is LSU baseball really needed to win tonight, and they were able to do so. And obviously we know the history with Mike Bianco and LSU and his son playing at LSU. Look, LSU baseball, I know it's been a tough year, but I would really like them to make the NCAA tournament because they could potentially go on a run. They can get hot. Michael Braswell stepping up big tonight. Tommy White hitting his first triple. Shout out to both of them. But we'll see what happens there. Shout out to LSU softball like we did. We started the show with them. They've got my full backing. Obviously, women's sports has been unfreaking believable on LSU's campus. Beach volleyball making a Final Four. Gymnastics winning a natty. LSU basketball back-to-back Elite Eights and a natty. It's insane. Gymnastics. The list goes on and on. So, bet select bet to arena tomorrow, 11:30 tip there. Let's go to BT. Grant Delpit is a legendary college football player. Grant Delpit is also a top five LSU DB of all time, accolades-wise. Ooh. I think you would have to say that. Right, you can't leave a three-year starter Thorpe Award winner who in year two led your team in sacks. Delpit's got to be on that. But top five LSU DB of all time, Tyron obviously has to be on that. Patrick Peterson, of course, has to be on that. Those are really the only non-negotiables. The final three slots can be a wide, wide range of people. Morris Claiborne makes a lot of sense. Grant Delpit makes a lot of sense. Jamal Adams makes a lot of sense. Chad Jones makes a lot of sense. Ron Landry makes a lot of sense. The only two that need to be on your top five list is Tyrann Mathieu and Patrick Peterson. You can't make an argument to the contrary to that. It's impossible. You could try your best, but your opinion on it, and I understand it's an opinion, your opinion on it wouldn't have any type of validity. But everybody else, it's a long jam. Corey Webster. Has a really strong case. You know, rarely do you get a four-year starter. Jalen Mills was a four-year starter. Obviously, was suspended for the first part of the final season, but Jalen Mills was incredible. Very underrated. One of three LSU DBs you can truly say played all three positions. Him, Tyron, and Dante. Even though Tyron is more of a safety at the next level. And Delpit never really played outside corner, but he could. Mills. Mills is... Jalen Mills was so freaking good. Jalen Mills is so freaking good. Eric Reed is someone else you can make an argument for. You can also make a case for Darren Evans. Very strong case for Mo Hampton. List goes on and on. Now, we move along. What have we given away tonight? Well, Kedrick already super chatted $20. So he's going to get this Darrell Williams card. in the mail. Shout out to you, Kedrick. Congratulations. You know, I've read a bunch of different spring reports, and one thing kind of stuck out to me. Sometimes in life, it is better to be lucky than good. One team that kind of sort of interested me in the SEC, and this isn't one that I am normally bullish on, but it's interesting that no one is talking about Mississippi State. Now, you see on the screen, if you're watching this on YouTube, if not listening to podcasts, please leave a 5-star review. Mississippi State is no longer on our schedule. A lot of old timers did not like that. We've played Mississippi State longer, I believe, than any other team in our school's history. All right. Mississippi State has a new coach in Jeff Lebby. And I would say Jeff Lebby is probably a guy who runs the closest variation of the Bryles offense that's out there. Now, he's got ties to Bryles. I believe they're extended family or something along those lines. And, you know, we get into a morality debate with all of that. But Jeff Lebby is a very, very talented play caller. So he leaves Ole Miss, he goes to Oklahoma, and now he is still in the SEC as a head coach at Mississippi State. One guy that grew on me after watching some of his clips at Baylor was Blake Shapen. All right. Lots of snaps. He's only 6 foot tall, but this will be one of the better situations he's been in. And look, I think Blake Shapen is okay. I really do think so. So I think Mississippi State has a chance to be sneaky tough next year. I don't love their roster, but we've rarely talked about them at all. We won't play them next year, but they're sneaky. Okay, they're sneaky. Now, why do I bring up Blake Shapen? Well, he's a Louisiana native, and BT, of course, knocks it out of the park as he always does. Dev says, is Gabe our best pass rusher? Or Gabe is our best pass rusher. He very well could be. He's definitely athletically got a ton of upside. Now let's go to BT. Do I believe Art Briles deserves a second chance? Now, like I always say on PHL, I am not a moralist. I am not here to get on a high horse to tell you what to believe or what not to believe. All right, a lot of you come here for my opinion on things. This is not football related, because if it was just football related, Art Briles would still be a head coach right now. But Art Briles at his peak was as good as any of these offensive hotshot coaches, if not better than what Lane is or any of these guys that you want to point to as very offensive-minded, talented play callers. I understand it backfired him getting the chance at Grambling, so I do not think he'll ever coach again. I do not believe he'll ever coach again. What I think will happen is he'll continue to be an analyst and a consultant, but he is one of those guys that truly got canceled. But maybe it was right. I don't necessarily know all the details of what actually happened with him. But it was a lot of nefarious stuff at what happened at Baylor. And that's a slippery slope that I will not go down. But at his peak, he was breathtaking. I mean, he was just very, very, very good. And a heavy influence on how the game is called and how it looks today. Right? And look, there's a lot of skeletons in the closet of a lot of these guys. So it is what it is. But his stuff was very, 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 very serious. So I'm not to belittle that in any way. We tied to Tony the Tiger. Van's in the house. Good to see you. Oh, you put Laurent Landry ahead of Grant Delpit. That's bold. That's bold. Very, very, very bold, if you ask me. Take a look at something really quickly. Let's see. I do think the NCAA is truly thinking. I believe this. I think the NCAA is thinking about moving on from walk-ons. And I theorize this at some point earlier in the year. There could be a world where your college football roster is 85 guys. Now, there is some issue with that. Grant says, I'm catching a stream for the first time in a minute. What are we talking about tonight? A lot. Absolutely, positively, a lot. I think one thing you can do to circumnavigate what could be a dilemma with walk-ons, right? So what the NCAA is thinking about is eliminating walk-ons because now you can pay players so much money. The scholarship can be covered very easily by one booster. Okay. That is not what the walk-on rule was designed for. The walk-on, any walk-on, should ever be a five-star recruit, which is what Kermani McClain is going to do at Florida. He is walking on, but obviously his expenses will be taken care of by other means. So one way you can circumnavigate that is have a hard roster cap of 85 players. Now, this is what I would do as far as the walk-on rule in college football. Because a lot of teams like having extra players or scout team practice guys. You can have a squad of players off to the side, but they need to be on scholarship in order to play. Or if you are a walk-on, you're only allowed a certain amount of snaps during a game. Let's make it five or whatever arbitrary number you can come up with. And that way you can work around that to where you're not having a roster full of all these extra four stars as walk-ons, because obviously, if you had that rule, Kermani McClain couldn't go to Florida. Let's go to Grant with the super chat. He says, eliminating walk-ons would wreck the Ivy League model. Ivy League only gives out needs-based scholarships. Yeah, it's true. I think, obviously, they would keep walk-ons. I think the major focus, though, would be on the Power 5 schools, right? ULM is not taking an 86 player and making them a walk-on, if that makes sense. So it could just be only a Power 5 rule where you can't have walk-ons anymore. All right. And walk-ons are my favorite players on the team. That's not a bad idea. Give them the redshirt rule where you only get to play four games. I'm fine with that. I'm certainly fine with that as well. But if you're just joining us, Will Campbell needs to be on the NCAA cover. And LSU would be a lot better team if they were able to go get Tyler Barron. They would be a lot better served if they were to go get him. Now, next thing. And I do feel this next thing holds importance. You know, I've been thinking a lot about three-star recruits. I've been thinking a whole lot about them lately because I always cheer for the three-star recruit, and there's always going to be diamonds in the rough. I don't have as much hard data on this other than NFL draft data that shows this to be true, but I do feel the recruiting services have gotten better at ranking players. I do feel they have gotten better. You know, there's just more data out on a lot of different things. Your best tight ends in the NFL now all run under 4.7. They all run sub 4.7. And what the studies in the NFL have shown is tight end is more of an athleticism-based position than, let's say, a quarterback or a wide receiver. Now, that doesn't mean you're not athletic. It's just tying in athleticism often correlates with great success. There's more of these types of things that are out there when it comes to identifying players. I do feel the services have gotten better. I do, for a lot of different reasons. They're just smarter. They know what to look for. They know what a bus profile looks more like. And, you know, on Power Hour SEC, I've done not one but two videos regrading recruiting classes. Now, type Y for yes, type N for no. Would you like me to do some retroactive grading of LSU's recruiting classes? It's one of my favorite things to do, to go back and take a look at a class that that may or may not have worked out. Okay, I want to show you this really quickly. So these are the two videos I have done over the past couple of days, all right? And all I've been doing on the SEC channel is going back and checking and reevaluating the recruiting classes of 2021 for Tennessee and Arkansas. Now, keep going back to this. Your best teams have mostly stud high school recruits from 2 years prior. So the 2022 class, which has Will Campbell, Emory Jones, Harold Perkins, and Mason Taylor, we should be a pretty good team in 2024 because, well, that 2022 class produced four bona fide stars. Not a whole lot of role players. Maybe Jordan Allen could be that. It also featured some pretty colossal busts, if you will. But it is so important to hammer your high school recruiting classes, especially from 2 years prior. Now, what's interesting is there are a lot of 2021 and older guys that are still on the team that have yet to turn into something truly great. And you need those things to happen. But one thing I've noticed is I don't know how important the two-year prior recruiting class is anymore because of the portal. You don't need those classes to be as deep and have as many hits as they used to. All right? Because you look at the best LSU teams. Their recruiting classes from 2 years prior had significantly high hit rates, significantly. I'll go to the grave saying this, and it could change. I am not sure on a per capita basis that LSU will have a recruiting class hit as well as the 2017 class. That will always be my favorite recruiting class at LSU. That was truly a breathtaking class with a lot of three stars being first round picks, a lot of four stars giving you four star production, and your five stars giving you five star production. Obviously, there was only a few in the 2017 class, Jacoby Stevens being one of them. You really, really, really need those classes to hit. So part of why I'm a little bullish on 2024 LSU is the 2022 class will be hitting their prime. Even though it's not a lot of players, it's four bona fide studs. And all four of them rarely, if ever, leave the field. All right? So those four guys are huge for you. Now, the issue comes with taking care of the other 18 spots. Let's go to Van. Van says, so Florida invited a cancer into their locker room. I won't go that far. Cancer is tough, but it could be. It very, very well could be. All right. Very well could be the case. Now, I want to go back to something Brian Kelly said after the spring game. I meant to play this last night. It's a little bit obviously dated. Where is the clip? All right, so this is a portion of the press conference that I wanted to get to here with Brian Kelly. And I want you to listen pretty closely. I'll play a little bit of this right here on PHL.
On the ball at him and making him defend and get over the top of the veer block of the tackle and then getting the back out and forcing him to, you know, to tackle that. So, you know, that was really good to see. You know, Kyron Lacy has had a great spring. Let's see him in a game-like situation continue to do that. I thought that was clear. And then the other thing that we highlighted is this a running game and how important that is with our offensive line to exert our will. And I thought I saw that. So the tenets that we talked about relative to leading up to this game, you know, I saw a lot of them. Now, you also saw the things that we have to get better at. Certainly, you know, we can't let the ball over our head. You know, we had some coverage mistakes. Those can't continue to happen, certainly. We got to continue to evaluate and recruit at the defensive tackle position. That's a must. I like what our edges are doing. We're getting good pressure from the edge, but you know, we've got to be really stout inside. So, you know, those are a couple of the observations that I think were what we talked about as a group in the sessions that we had that I saw today. So with that, go at it.
Yeah, Coach, you talked about a couple of guys, just trying to pick it up for the audition, I guess, quote unquote. Just what did you make of somebody like Kylan Jackson, second year, looked like he made some plays out there, and then Gabe Relaford, one of your new guys, defensive lineman for freshman. Just what did you make of their two performances?
Yeah, so it's all like you got to look at, you know, Gabe was going up against the freshman, right? And he's a freshman. I get that. But, you know, now we're going to have to take Gabe and we're going to have to get Gabe some reps against, you know, Will Campbell. We're going to have to get him up against Emery, you know, because he's earned that now. That we've got to be able to see what he looks like against those guys. What I liked about Caleb was patience today. He was a lot more patient on his running fits. He was a lot more north and south. He had been a guy that had a tendency to bounce out and bleed out to the sideline instead of just hitting the thing north and south. And that was really encouraging with his physicality and speed. If he hits these things north and south, as you saw in the goal line piece of our scrimmage, you know, he can crease a defense.
Sorry, I meant to say Kylan Jackson.
Well, Caleb did a great job. And you might have said Kylan, but I thought Kylan did a nice job in coverage. But again, you know, his skill set is such that, you know, he's going to do a really good job on the tight ends. And we expect him to do that. I think what we need to see is his run fits. And you know, we'll have to watch the film to see that.
Middle coach, I saw you grab Nuss early and talk to him a little bit. What did you think of his day and how he settled in?
I thought it was good. You know, I thought there was a run read where he tried to, you know, spit the ball out early with Major Burns. You know, Major kind of plays with him a little bit on the line of scrimmage, off playing a little bit of cat and mouse. And, you know, I told him, listen, if he's on the line of scrimmage, he can't get into his B-gap fit. Just hand the ball off. He can't get there. And proximity sometimes forces him to do some things that he shouldn't do. So other than that, I thought he did a really nice job. The throw as he stepped up in the pocket was, you know, quintessential in terms of what he's able to do. He keeps his eyes down the field. That's a huge thing, right? As he steps up in the pocket, he sees, you know, an open receiver down the field. I thought he was clean today. I thought he was efficient. I thought he did the things that we expected him to do.
Wilson, like you said, those long plays that there was, you know, busting the secondary. Where did the breakdowns occur?
Well, one of them was cover two, and we're in cover three and we're playing cover two. I mean, so the corner's rolled up. He's supposed to be a deep defender. I mean, you can't have those kind of mistakes. They're unacceptable, and that's going to cost you a chance to be on the field. So that's one thing. And then we just got flat out outrun for the football. You know, we were in a coverage that we're supposed to be over the top. We just got flat out beat in those situations. So sometimes you just got to take a hard look at, you know, who do we have, you know, and what kind of situations do we put them in against, you know, an elite receiver, and we weren't game playing against our defense today. Right. So, you know, if we got in that kind of situation, we may have to game plan and help out a corner in that situation. We didn't do that today.
Coach, obviously you talked about AJ, you talked about Ricky. What did you see from the ability standpoint within the day, just getting them out there connecting with them?
Yeah. I mean, I think the defensive line had the upper hand on our offensive line. Those guys didn't get very comfortable in the pocket.
So that's enough right there from BK. It was really the first portion, but I went ahead and played like the cover two portion. And once again, don't give up explosive plays. Make the touchdown saving tackle. Don't let those things bother. But I went ahead and played that whole portion. But really, it's the first portion. We haven't talked a whole lot about Harold Perkins and his run fits and all of that. And it goes back to the defensive tackle stuff, right? You know, part of why the defensive tackle search was so important is we really do need those guys to help out our backers next year. Yeah, I would do a video breakdown, not of 2022. I've been doing a lot on 2021 recruiting classes on the SEC channel. And I would highly recommend, I would love y'all's feedback on it because it's a different type of video. Going through player by player and looking at hit rate, bust rate, and there is nuance that comes into if a player is a hit or not. Like, for instance, I wouldn't necessarily consider like Walker Howard a miss because he plays quarterback. You know, he really didn't have a chance. He's not had a chance to show what he can do. Now, in theory, you can always beat people out. But he's not going to beat out Jackson Dart at Ole Miss. He wasn't going to beat out Jaden Daniels, and he wasn't going to beat out Garrett Nussmeier. But, you know, Pegasus, when I go through and I do, you know, these breakdowns, I normally give an F if you've done absolutely nothing. You get a D if you normally did something. C if you're, you know, a replaceable backup that played a decent amount. A B is pretty self-explanatory. That means you're just solid. And then obviously an A. So, you know, like 2021 class, Mason Smith would probably be an A or B minus, if you will, or B plus. Brian Tabas Jr. would be an A. Malik Nabers would be an A. So, yeah, I might do one of those videos for the LSU channel. And, you know, 2021 class was Ed Orgeron's final class. We go to Scott V. Orgeron was always a great evaluator of talent. He was all about the size to speed ratio. Welcome to the channel, Scott V, as well. I believe you are new. And you are right. Orgeron was a really good recruiter. He was a really, really, really good recruiter. Okay. And Burgess makes a good point about Orgeron. Just couldn't handle the success. Let's go to Van. True, Nance. But to be fair, BK's busted on a few coaches as well. Yeah, and ultimately, your coordinators are 85% of your coaching hires. You've got to get that right. But the other 15% is very important as well. At least this time around, he got it right. Now, one thing I will push back on quite a bit. And look, I have hammered Brian Kelly for hiring Matt House. Even before it happened, I said, don't do it. And he did it. And House did some good things, but mostly wasn't great. The one thing I would push back on, though, is, you know, there's so many people out there that have said, well, we should have never let Blake Baker go from the get-go. And that is just nonsense. He wasn't the coordinator. Now, he was a very good linebackers coach. Damon Clark owes a good portion of his career to Blake Baker. But he wasn't a coordinator. Now, he had a lot of play calling experience, obviously, at Miami, Louisiana Tech, and so on. So, yeah, it would have made some sense. But if I was in Brian Kelly's shoes, I would have moved on as well. And honestly, Blake Baker would probably tell you the same thing. You know, he grew so much at Missouri, and he wouldn't be the coordinator he is today if it wasn't for the Missouri stuff and him being as successful as he was at Missouri. All right, so look, if you guys want to ask me about a Brian Kelly coaching hire, I'll give you my honest opinion. The Polian hire was not a bad hire. Now, was our special teams not good? Yes, it wasn't good. But we quickly rectified it and brought in a new special teams coordinator. And we really don't know how good our special teams was last year because we really didn't need it because Jaden was so freaking good and our defense was so bad. And that limits the amount of punts in a game. It also limits the amount of field goals in a game and so on. But Brian Kelly really had no choice but to bring Polian with him. You got to remember, he struck out on the strength coach that he tried to bring down here at Notre Dame. So he wanted some familiarity outside of bringing back Mike Dimbrock. So, yes, Brian Kelly should have brought Polian with him. It's not his fault that Polian, who was a good special teams coach at Notre Dame, didn't work out at LSU. And there's a lot of different reasons as to why. And one way I'll defend Coach Polian, because we had such a small freshman class, we didn't really have a whole lot of special teamers, and we were having to rely on Dre Jenkins on special teams when he was a starter at wide receiver. So I'm not saying starters shouldn't be special teamers. It's just we didn't have a whole lot of role guys that were good special teamers for us. So I will always defend Coach Polian. Now, here's what you're going to do. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you do Super Chat, we'll keep this party moving. Late night in PHL Nation. I say late night. It's only 9:22. I'm tired as hell. Timberwolves destroying Denver. Denver was up 9-2, and the score is now 82-57. So we will get a game 7. And this NBA playoffs has been stupendously good. Now, we knew the Cavaliers were going to get taken care of by the Celtics. I thought it was interesting that the Cavaliers players load managed in the playoffs. They wouldn't tough it out through injury, and they lost with their backs against the wall. But all the other series have been so good. The other three series, and I keep going back to this very thing, and why I really freaking enjoyed this year's college football playoff, even though Florida State should have been in it. I love variety. I just do. Like, of course, I want LSU to win the national championship every year, but sports to me are so much better when the same damn teams are not winning every year, right? The Kansas City Chiefs, this version of the Kansas City Chiefs, should have never have won the Super Bowl, but they did. And we can get into, well, it was fixed, Taylor Swift. They still won it, and they shouldn't have won it because all the other teams choked, all right? I like the fact that outside of the Celtics, who have basically gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals every year during the Jason Tatum era, I'm happy that the Western Conference is new. Timberwolves are new. Denver, only year two of their title defense. Dallas, Luka's been in the spot before, but still relatively new. And then obviously, the Oklahoma City Thunder, brand new. So, I like LeBron. It is refreshing that he's not there. I like Steph. It is refreshing that he's not there. I like KD. It is refreshing that he's not there. I love variety. I really, really, really do. But I did find it interesting that the Cavaliers players wouldn't tough it out. One of my biggest conspiracies, and it's not really a conspiracy in the NBA, but I really do think NBA players are a little reluctant to tough it out in the playoffs. And you would think it's the opposite, but I've always found it to be very interesting. Whereas in the NFL, a lot of guys just tough it out. Okay. We'll take a few more here. Once again, please go join our PHL Patreon. Patreon.com/LSU football. Let's see, where are we at on signups? I think we're at 55. We're at 55 signups. It's pretty good for a niche channel. 100 signups would be better. All right, 55 signups, I'll take it. Okay. We do need to announce a winner for the Kyron Lacy giveaway, and it is Boris. Boris was the winner. He got the trivia question correct, or he was the closest to the correct answer. So shout out to you, Boris, if you are watching right now. I don't know if you're watching. So Boris wins. But on Patreon right now, you get my breakdown of JVR sucks. Do I think he is good? I show you some stats where he did some really good things. Are there some concerns? I showed you in the Patreon film study that there are some concerns. Now, there's a lot to consume. It's not a long video, but there's a lot to process because, well, this is Green Valley State. And there are some red flags for me when discussing his profile and his career. But he is very explosive. He's very quick. He's got a pretty nice first step. And he's a good tackler. So I'm very interested to see how this plays out. Let's take a few more. Hal says, go Timberwolves. Let's go to D. Mitch. I'm not tearing anything for this. I'm not going to be here next year. Yeah, will the Cavaliers trade Donovan Mitchell? I don't know. Do I believe he was really hurt? There's probably something there that's tweaked. But you couldn't tell me that if it was a finals, he wouldn't be out there. Now, it is confirmed. LSU baseball versus Ole Miss will be a noon first pitch Friday. Obviously, weather is weathering. Will they play a full nine? Will they only play seven? I don't know. Weather gets weird this time of year in the 225. But shout out to LSU baseball and LSU softball. Now, let's chat about our top super chatters. Grant takes it home on Facebook, but our top super chatter on my preferred platform was Kedrick with the big Cash App donation. I really do appreciate that.
That's crazy. Trying to think if there's any update on LSU softball. There isn't. There isn't. So looks like it'll still be on tomorrow. I thought this was interesting. You know, one of my favorite what is this? Carter. Yeah, so softball, correct me if I'm wrong, Al, it's 11 a.m. tomorrow. Van says, Carter, I wish I could send you more cash, but Garitol has had a price increase of about 40% in the last 3.5 years. Softball for Lafayette moved up. So, it sounds like Garitol is a medicine that you need to live. And that is very sad that the price of what you need to live goes up. That shouldn't be the case. I don't really even think that's political. That just shouldn't be the case. I'm sorry about that, Van. But look, I understand it. You know, I look at my analytics all the time, and look, because of stuff like that, you know, my super chats have gone down. But look, it's part of it. You know, this is a very volatile business, and I am fine when I'm making a whole lot of money. I do need to make more. But, yeah, I'm sorry about that, Van. I really, really, really am. You take care of yourself. You being here is very, very, very important. You being alive is very, very, very important. Dang, Chance. What type of medication are you on? Only the old folks take that medicine? It cures all. Oh, man, that is so funny. Yeah, weather's starting to get nasty where I am, too, so I don't want it to. You know, your Wi-Fi can go out if the weather gets a little nasty. So I will sign off. Don't forget, I'll be chatting in the Discord after this is over. Once again, shout out to our top super chatter, Kedrick. And we will talk to you on Sunday night. TPVN. Drops a heavy one. I'll give you the answer on Sunday. I just know for me, one LSU receiver that's got to be on your top five, and your opinion holds no weight if you do not put James Wright in your top five or Quantavius Leslie in your top five. NS Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tim Moulton in your top five. That only leaves two extra slots. And tonight we are doing Slam and Salmon. Let's go. Let's go.